Howdy! Thanks for tuning into Orion Photo Group's exclusive podcast. For each episode, we're going to dive into the lives of OPG's photographers and videographers across the country. We're going to talk shop, hear their stories, and listen to any advice they want to offer us up. So grab a tasty beverage and settle in for some fun conversations featuring our little community. That's you. Let's go! All right, here we go. Another episode of Success Stories with the Orion Photo Group, or as we like to call it, OPG. This week, I am here with Chicago photographer Ruben Burgos. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yes. Yes, perfect.
Nice. So I have this habit of with my other podcasts and even these, forgetting, like, we talk beforehand and then I forget to ask you to pronounce your name properly. So a lot of episodes, I really butcher people's names and I really hate to do that. Anyway, Ruben is from Chicago. And he's been a photographer for a long time. He's been with the Orion Photo Group for a long time. We're going to get to know him a little bit better. So, Ruben, thanks for being here today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I have to say that, Ruben, when I first started coming up on a year and a half now with the Orion Photo Group, you were definitely somebody who was kind of like a smiling face that I've interacted with, smiling face meaning metaphorically, via emails and advice, and you've been on the Facebook group, and just a friendly person I've been able to interact, as I navigated, coming on board with these guys. So thank you for that.
Oh, it's quite all right. It's a wonderful group, and it's a good organization. It's full of really good people with good intentions. I have yet to run into like that ego or that person who just thinks they know everything. I think the majority of people, if not all, are the kind that are willing to share what they know, but are also willing to listen and learn and absorb, which is really unique, I think.
You know, that's a really, you make a very good point. And it's definitely one of the things that I've enjoyed working with the company is that culture kind of comes from top down, right? So I've known the owners of the Orion Photo Group for many years and interacted with them in different ways before I started working with them, working in the industry. And you cannot meet three of the nicest people on the planet than the owners of the Orion Photo Group. And, you know, they're young guys and hard workers, and, you know, that kind of culture definitely disseminates through the company. But ego has been the one thing that, I've worked in a bunch of corporations since I stopped shooting full time. And ego is the one thing that can definitely take down a company or always having somebody that's the smartest person in the room. There's none of that in this company, which I've really, really enjoyed. So it's a good point. And you're right. It is well-intentioned across the board as far as the work that you're doing with us and being a photographer with us. And that's one of the joys that's been great about working with them is that I'm helping to build this community. Ruben, you're being one of the people that's part of it. And it's been a real joy getting to know so many of you who work with this organization. So that being said, how long have you been? Some of your information here, but how long have you been shooting with us? Been a while.
With you guys, about 6 years, six seasons.
Yeah.
So not nearly as long as I've been shooting. I've been shooting since 1987. So, yeah, good math.
Wow.
So I started with a mass market studio in Chicago. And then after about 4 years there, I went out on my own. And then after that, I retired for all of about two seasons. And then came back. But rather than shoot for myself, I took the advice of a friend and says, listen, you love photography. You don't have to shoot for yourself. You don't have to design albums. You don't have to meet clients. Why don't you shoot for somebody? And that's where you folks came in. Mm. And it's been a marriage in heaven. It's really wonderful. I get to do what I love without the back end, which back end is work. Mm-hmm. I remember, speaking to a number of different groups and organizations back in the film days. And we all agreed that, owning a studio, running a studio is like 90% other, 10% photography, 90% other. And, you know, I don't know if like your average person who aspires to, you know, have a small studio knows that, because the other can be pretty taxing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's uncreative. You know, it's administration. It's business. It's a lot of things, which you know about because you've done this. So for me, this is a perfect fit. At my point in my career, I was an owner. Now I'm not an owner. Mm-hmm. I'm an employee, and it feels good.
And that's awesome. And I don't meet too many people who's been an active shooter for as long as you have. And you and I are very similar in the sense that I shot my first wedding in 1987 as well. And we were probably about the same age. And I remember being a young kid. And I worked for a big studio, not as big as Orion Photo Group, but I worked for a larger studio in where I grew up, just outside New York City, for about 10 years. And I remember the one parameter, he gave me all the equipment to shoot with, but the one thing I needed to do was I needed to buy my own tuxedo.
Yeah.
You remember those days? All wedding photographers wore a tuxedo, right?
Man.
And I had one tuxedo, which actually...
I still have a picture of the... We did a group shot at the lakefront. We all showed up in our tuxedos. It was like 20 guys and maybe 6 girls, all in tuxedos. Mm-hmm. To do a, you know, I guess a class picture, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody who worked for the studio. Yeah, it's amazing that we did that. And we did it with running around with very heavy Met splashes, and film, and multiple cameras. And it was, and that's assuming you did it in 35. I know that New York is a big medium format town. Chicago has its own medium format a niche to the market back in the film days, of course.
Yeah.
And that gear isn't light.
No. I used to shoot with a Mamiya 645 and a Sumpac 611 on top of it on a bracket with a battery.
Yeah.
My gosh,
right,
that thing
right.
had
let's,
to
let's
weigh.
Not forget, you had to pack all the cassettes too. And if you had black and white, you had your black and white cassettes. And if you were really fancy, you had your high speed black and white.
Yep.
Your average run of the mill black and white, and the same emulsions for color. So
yep.
It was. that was amazing.
It is amazing. And I remember he used to give me, he had these kits. They had the Mamiya 645, a bracket, which by the way, were handmade by somebody. They were like these sheet metal brackets, all mixed up. And the guy who made them actually wound up made a whole business of selling them to a local camera store in New York City. And he actually made pretty decent money doing it. But anyway, he would give me 10 rolls of film. I'm sorry. He would give me 15 rolls of film for a wedding, 10 rolls of film for a bar mitzvah. And he would say, or bat mitzvah. And he would say to me, give me 7 rolls for the bar bat mitzvah back and 10 or 12 for the wedding. And that would be it. 15 shots on a roll.
Wow.
And that would be it for the whole wedding. And, anyway, we could go on and on about that. But I remember those early days. You were probably very young and walking into a studio or walking in being a bride and as being a senior in high school and saying, "Hey, I'm your wedding photographer for the day." And I remember being like this. I didn't even shave at that point. And it looked very young. But anyway, so you've been, you've worked for other studios and in the Chicago area, some big ones too. I'm looking at your thing here. You says you bought your first camera when you ordered it back in the day from your Sears catalog. You were 17 working at McDonald's.
Right.
And you forged your credit up and paid it off. And or to your dad's name.
I didn't have any credit. Yeah, I used my dad's information, forged it. It was a Pentax K1000.
Oh, gosh.
And it was a beautiful camera.
It was.
Came with a kit lens and a really cheap old 135 and this little dinky flash that would fit in the palm of your hand. Mm-hmm. That had a guide number of like 6. Ridiculous. But it was everything to me. That was everything. That was like, you know,
yeah,
so cool.
And the Pentax was like a workhorse camera that was a game changer at that time for sure. It was kind of like the 5D Mark I.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a beautiful camera to look at and a beautiful camera to shoot with.
So tell me,
Quite a bit.
So tell me about, so you're, and gosh, we've gone on way too long. Tell me about how you got started in photography. What was the spark? That's one of the questions that I like to ask.
My folks owned a two flat, and a renter moved in, and he happened to work for a local camera, a local film finisher called LaSalle Photo. And he was a photographer, this guy. So I would go upstairs and I would just talk to him, and he showed me. He whipped out this beautiful Halliburton case, and he had these beautiful, at the time I didn't know what they were, but I realized later on that those were Minolta SD-101. So he had like two of those, and he had some lenses and this really cool Suntech flash. So I guess I fell in love with the gear first.
Mm-hmm.
That was, of course, in high school. So shortly thereafter, I joined the photo club and did all of the photo club stuff, borrowing their equipment, and then eventually got my own. So that was my start to just photography in general, the art of photography, the idea. I also fell in love with the lab, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a component of this generation. For the most part, not all, but for the most part, they'll never really understand, you know, the magic it was to take a picture, not see it behind the screen of your camera, and take it into a dark room, develop it, put it in a tray, and see it come up. That was an anticipation and a magic that is, I think, lost to a generation. It was, I think, for me, really special.
Yeah.
You know, solidified my love of photography. It was a component, you know, it was a component of photography. It wasn't the whole, but it was certainly, you know, a step in the production of an image.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, you know, many years ago, the spark was definitely going out and shooting, and then, you know, processing the film and making prints and darkroom work, and that was a whole other art in itself. I was never a big fan of the dark room. I didn't really enjoy it. I enjoyed the shooting part more of it. The only reason I used to like going in the dark room is, believe it or not, back in the day in high school, they would let us smoke in the dark room.
College. Oh my God.
we had to be kind of cool about it, but that was my and obviously
so along with the fix there in the stop bath, you were throwing that stuff. It was already polluted air, you added more to it.
And I think that's what the teachers were like, well, you're already destroying your fingers with that fixer anyway. So if you want to kill your lungs, go for it. It was the 80s. It was a different time, as my parents used to say. But so that was your spark getting into it. You started shooting weddings. And just, you know, as a side note, you know, introducing you, you have shot over 600 weddings, it says here. You've done over, I think, 100 weddings with us, which, you know, I just need to... There aren't many people who have shot that many weddings with us. So thank you.
Thank you.
Your wedding portfolio has been shown over 300 times, and you know, in the offices, when your name is brought up, everybody has a big smile on their face. They love you very much, and I'm sure your clients do as well. So, okay,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you know, you were definitely when we were putting together the list of the first people we were reaching out to. Again, being a newer person in the company, I asked a few people in the office who you know. And they were like, yes, you definitely have to interview Ruben. So, cool. I'm looking at your portfolio now, and I just kind of want to talk about some of the things that I think are hard for people when they first onboard with us is getting through those first jobs. Or I always remember getting through the first jobs. Even I still remember, like I was saying before, that new tuxedo on, knocking on the door of the bride, and saying hello in those first couple of minutes. I always ask, like, is there something you do when you walk in the door? What do you do? You got to break the ice when you walk in the door. What is your trick?
I break the ice by calling the bride about 3 weeks before the wedding.
Okay.
We're going to talk about her day. We're going to, you know, print out and, of course, download, you know, the wedding plan, you know, the cut sheet and whatnot, and going over it and going over it meticulously. And I would say maybe 4 out of 10 times that needs to be amended, because she just didn't realize that it would take this long, or maybe she's allocated too much time. So they appreciate that. They appreciate the guidance. And I know that we've got a staff, and we've got some people on board whose job is to do that. That's the kind of thing where, you know, you can't have too much help. And right. So guiding them through the process is the first breaking of the ice. They really appreciate it. They really, at the conclusion of those conversations, it's like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Looking so forward to working with you. So you've already broken the ice. So my first piece of advice is, you know, you already know you're booked. You already know their names. You already have their phone number. Reach out. And if you see that the portal has not been populated with the information that you need, you can just call them or send them a text and say, hey, you know, it's Ruben, I'm really excited for your day. Be sure to visit the portal and give us the information we need so we can deliver a perfect wedding for you. They hear that and they're scrambling. They paid good money for you.
Yeah.
The last thing they want is to trip themselves up because they failed to do something. So that's the first. So there's almost no breaking of the ice. Now, when I worked for somebody else years ago, we would be given the job the week before. There wasn't a whole lot of room, you know, and nobody had a cell phone, you know, there was no texting, there was no email, you had to call. Sometimes you'd have to call repeatedly just to get them to pick up. And there have been occasions, more than a few, where I couldn't reach them. They were at the rehearsal dinner. You know, 7 days is not that long to try to reach somebody and have a conversation with the technology of that era, a phone. So today, you know, that doesn't exist. So my advice for anybody starting, anybody new, you want to break the ice, break it over the phone, break it over text. You can do that too. Break it over email. You have voice, text, email. You have three forms of reaching out to say hello and to show them that you care, because, you know, they're going to reciprocate. They're going to really care because you took the trouble to care.
And you make a good point, and it's one of the things that's kind of on my roadmap for next year is kind of a sequence for contacting the brides or the couples, I should say. And you put it very eloquently as far as that sequence is, you know, when I make a phone call to a new person, generally it starts with a text. Hey, I'd like to call you. Can we talk this afternoon? Like, you know, setting a time as opposed to cold calling. Then I always do, like anybody new that I'm working with, I really do try to have a phone conversation. And then, you know, third, you could also do the email in advance as well. But what I do, and I think this is a really good point that I want to drive home, is that conversation that you're having, and I think this is something that is really important for newer photographers or people who haven't shot a ton of weddings or worked in this situation, is that you need to, within 30, 45 seconds of that call, make yourself sound like you're the expert of what you're doing and you're an expert at weddings. And that is, and that generally can be done a number of ways. One of them being, you know, and I'm sure that you do this too, like, hey, I looked at your timeline and everything looks great. I'm really excited about it. And it's kind of like when you judge photography competitions, you call it the shit sandwich, and you want to say something, if there's something that you see there, like, hey, I'm really excited about your wedding. By the way, I see this part of it that, you know, I just want a little more clarity on, or can we discuss it? And, you know, but this other stuff looks amazing. I can't wait to do it. And that's kind of one of those things that really helps to get them excited about being there, right?
Yes, exactly. Tactfully being able to just gently guide them to where they need to be. And it, you know, and there are selfish reasons for that.
Of course,
it's an easier day for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to fight. You don't have to nothing's worse than a wedding that's gone, south because they ran out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're pressuring you to do all these things that you know you could have done had you had the appropriate amount of time. Or they get in a bad mood. And that's real hard to overcome. And they're in a bad mood because things went south. And things went south because things weren't planned. And things weren't planned because things weren't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Show me a bad wedding and I'll show you a bad plan. Mm-hmm. They almost go hand in hand.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And it is a drag too sometimes where, you just can't help it. You are shooting people on one of the most emotional days, if not the most emotional day of their life. And I used to say it's the, especially to newer people that were working with me, like you're going to see the best and the absolute worst all in a 20-minute period.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you could do about it, but yeah. Also, I see, and I think maybe you could give some advice to one of the things that says map out your travels and additional time. Friday and Saturday traffic is in Chicago is often very heavy and summer festivals. Add the frustrations of getting from point A to point B. And I just put a post up on the Facebook group yesterday, thanks to Kate Duffy, and who said that, the Philadelphia Marathon is running tomorrow and people should beware. And you put it right there too, festivals and all of that stuff too. Any advice you could give to a newer photographer as they're kind of planning out their day?
Yeah, know the activities. Mm-hmm. You hit it right on the head. If somebody's saying that I want to go from, a south suburban suburb to, the middle of downtown Chicago during Lollapalooza, it's just unrealistic. Just is. And you try to be as nice as possible about it. But, in the end, it is their day.
Yeah.
So if they insist on trying, then it is your obligation to try. You may know deep down in your heart that it'll fail. But you've already done due diligence. You've told them, you've given them your best expert advice on why this may not be such a good idea. They chose to omit it, we're kind of like, the legal team, you give advice and it's up to your client to take it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. This is awesome, Ruben. Let's talk about gear. Nikon, Canon, Sony, what do you shoot with?
Being kind of stuck in my own ways, I'm a Nikon guy.
Uh-huh.
After my Pentax, I got a F2.
Mm-hmm.
No, I got an F1.
Oh, gosh. What that's worth
F2.
Now?
Yeah. No, I know. but I've been a Nikon guy. I guess that's what I'm saying. So I went from Pentax to F1, then an F2, then an FM. Then an F100.
Mm-hmm.
And then I never really went to anything other than at F100, it went to digital.
Right.
And
that's
digital
correct.
was D2X.
Mm-hmm.
The D2X was the camera that I was waiting for. And, people laugh when I tell them what the prices we paid, which you will remember. You will remember paying $400 for a 4 GB card at Adorama. And that was a good price. That
4 GB. I remember paying $800 for a 1 GB card.
Yes.
For a micro drive.
And we thought it was really a deal because we were spending that and then some on film and processing just to make the proofs.
Yep.
So I have amassed a lot of lenses. And
I see
to circle back to that conversation, that this young lady is going to have with me about her day will pretty much dictate what additional lenses outside of my standard kit that I will bring.
Mm-hmm.
My standard kit is a 17-35, a 28-70, and an 80-200.
Mm-hmm.
Those three come with me regardless.
Mm-hmm.
I have two bodies and a backup third. I have four flashes, but only two are with me. The other ones are, again, in reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Now, based on the conversation we're having, I may bring some fast lenses and do some things that I like to do, but only when there's time.
Right.
wedding photography is a race against time. You have to knock out the basics, you know, the bride alone, the groom alone, bride and groom together. The family pictures, real important. Once you get all the basics down, then you can reach out and really get creative. And by creative, I mean, you know, you could do some, you can have some fun with a fisheye, you know, put it on the floor, have it pointing straight to the sky, have everybody huddle around it, make funny faces. Using long lenses with extremely shallow depths of field. You know, so for some real, you know, for some real studies, you know, facial studies of just the bride and groom and expression and emotion. But it all boils down to just one factor, time. Because you have to knock out the basics. If you don't knock out the basics, it's a complaint. So you have to get the basics. You have to get the fundamental images that they expect. Then you could break out with, you know, some really creative stuff.
Yeah. And that, yeah, I see that. I'm looking at all the lenses that you have. That's great. And I think that we definitely gravitate towards, are you a zoom shooter, your prime shooter? You know, 17-35, 28-7, 8200. Like, yeah, you don't need anything else to shoot weddings, but, you know, it is neat when you can go with a fast prime to do exactly what you're saying. All right. I got one last question for you, and then we're going to wrap up. I'm looking through your portfolio, your George Street portfolio, and this is going to be kind of an oddball question, but in a program that I was working on, I talk about cake cutting, and you have some really fun cake cutting shots here, but they're classic. Like, they're very, very classic shots. And one of my pet peeves with cake cutting pictures is when people do cake cuttings without the cake in the shot. And that was like a big thing for like old school photographers, is that like you paid all this money for a cake. When they cut the cake or they feed each other is really more what I'm talking. The cake should be in the shot, right? And you may or may not agree with me, but I'm looking at these shots and they're really wonderful pictures and they're really fun. And I see that the people are in the background and like, it's just, they're good shots. And so like, and I think this is one thing that like newer photographers don't like. It's the last thing that they learn how to do well. So what would be your advice to new photographers on how to do cake cutting shots? I know that's a random question.
Yeah, okay. Well, try to get it from multiple angles. You know, one, always stay behind the videographer, you know, because you have to, he needs coverage. You just need moments. So stay behind the videographer and change your perspective. Change it at least twice.
Okay.
More than twice may not be necessary, but if you change your perspective, you basically change the view. So, and it's a timing thing. So as they're cutting, maybe go from left to right, maybe a few feet, without ever crossing the video camera's coverage. And then as the cake, as the piece of cake comes out, and they're going to start to feed each other, just change that perspective as well. You might go from horizontal to vertical in a situation like that, or vice versa. So I think changing perspectives quickly, and that's where zoom lenses really, really
come into play.
You know, you only have a few seconds, and I can rack back to 28, come in close for a very expansive view of the room, or I can step back, zoom in, and get a real tight view, you know, and compress the background. So zoom lenses, that's where zoom lenses win. Whenever I shoot prime, it's because I'm shooting at f2 or faster. That's the only reason I shoot a prime. I'm not going to put a prime lens on and stop down to f8. No. If I put an 85 1/4, it's because I want 1/4.
That's one setting,
you know. Yeah, right. That's the reason. Because if I shot if I took my 200 and set it to 85 and then got my 85 1/4 and said it's 85. One's a 2.8, one's a 1/4. The images are entirely different. If you look at the background, the bokeh, oh my God, night and day.
Yeah.
And that's just what, two stops difference? But those two stops are huge when you look at the final image. They really are.
And it's so funny that, you know, just everything that you described is exactly what I'm looking at in your portfolio here. You have one shot where the bride and groom is on the left side of the cake, then they're cutting the cake, they're on the right side of the cake, then they're feeding each other, they're back on the right side of the cake. And then there's another shot of them dancing together, and the cake is on the left-hand side. And the whole time, you have all of the people in the background smiling and enjoying, you know, this moment that's going on. And you just described exactly like the coordinate. There's a lot of coordination in stuff like this and getting it right. And you know, quite often the thing that can screw everything up is a overzealous catering manager who needs to be right on top of them the entire time. But in these shots, when you get it right, it's really wonderful. As opposed to, and I think what a lot of people do sometimes is they'll shoot, you know, with the people behind them, and all there is blank walls behind them. So, you know, kudos to you. And again, you're right, coordinating with the videographer so that you're not getting in his way, and at the same time, still getting all of those shots. All right, so we're almost at time, and I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. Any piece of advice you could give to this is the question I have for you. What is it that's, what keeps you excited about shooting, and how do you, like 600 weddings is a lot. How do you keep going?
How do I keep going? Well, I just think the adventure of that next wedding. I mean, a wedding's a wedding, but in a lot of ways it isn't. Mm. Different people, sometimes different vibes. You know, it's just like, that's what we do. You know, it's like, you know, an athlete who, you know, dunks a basketball. It's what we do. Mm. It's what we know. Mm. It's what we enjoy. Mm. You know, in my free time, I'm watching YouTubes. You know, mm-hmm. Peter Lindbergh, I just saw him, you know, and he was shooting the Pirelli calendar. I love photography. Mm. I love filmmaking, too. Mm. I've seen a lot of documentaries about the Coen brothers and their approach to lighting and, you know, composition. I'm a visual artist. I also like to paint. You know, I'm an avid oil painter. Mm, I think if you're an artist, you're an artist, period. Yeah. End of story. That keeps you going because you're an artist.
Right.
That's what you do. And the medium that I get paid for is photography, but I love art. Mm-hmm. I could spend a month at the Museum of Art in Chicago. You know, this is what we do. We're artists.
And that's one museum I've never been to. And I've been meaning to get there since moving out here to the Midwest. Excuse me. And you make
art
a good point.
Art Institute, dude, you gotta go.
I know. And that's actually number one, Art Institute. And I've never been, and I've got to get there.
Time it with the Chicago Marathon, you know, which I know you're going to be
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. So you're going to come out and run with me?
Are you kidding? Not with these knees. I admire the fact that you do. I ran track in high school, but lost my knees when I was 30. And no, I'm an avid admirer of those who can.
Well, it's funny that you say that because, you know, I didn't pick up running until I was like my late 30s. So I had never run. I was never an athlete. So I like to joke with some of my friends like yourself, who ruined their knees in their teenage years and in their 20s. I never did it. So I have the advantage of not having a broken down body, although I'm doing a pretty good job of destroying it right now. So there's that. But running
I saw you put in 10 miles recently.
Well, yeah, I wasn't happy amazing. I wasn't happy with my race time a couple weeks ago. So I've decided to run another half marathon in about 2 weeks. And you have to do 11 this weekend.
You're doing it. I mean, you can finish it. How many people your age or our age can say that they can even complete 10 miles, let alone do it at a time that's respectable? That's an accomplishment.
It's a progress and it's a process, you know. And I the process of becoming a runner is very much so like learning how to be a photographer or, you know, requires studying and training. And, you know, it really came into play. Exercise has been something that has what I've learned through running my own business and then working in very stressful environments in other companies is the release that I need to remain sane. It was also, I say this jokingly, but like when my kids were little, like, it was the only way I could get out of the house. And the longer that I ran, the more time I could spend out of the house. Wow. But
do you enter into a meditative state when you do these long distance runs?
It is. I do.
You meditate?
I do. You know what? Yeah. You know what it allows me to do? A lot of times, it allows me the time to think and come up with ideas from a creative process. A lot of times, when I start runs, I will put an idea in my head, something that I want to think about. Maybe it's a marketing idea, how to come up, drum up more business, how to just, you know, little ideas. And it is amazing about 30 to 45 minutes into a run, how like all the other distractions of life just go away because you're concentrating on breathing and not tripping. And if you only are thinking about one thing, it really frees your mind up. It's a really, really wonderful experience for me. And I hope I can keep running for many, many years. But anyway, this isn't about me. It's about you. And I really appreciate everything that you've given us today. Again, I love your story. And I don't think this is going to be the last time we talk. And again, thank you. You helped on that photo walk in Chicago and gave us some really great behind-the-scenes shots. I really, really appreciate it. So thank you for that again. And I think down the road, maybe we could see you as a teacher in teaching things, you know, locally or, you know, down the road with us, which, you know, I think you would enjoy.
I would. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me. And we'll see you soon. Okay?
Yeah, cool. All right. So that'll do it for this week's episode of Success Stories with the Orion Photo Group, or as we like to call it, OPG. Do you have a success story you'd like to share? Please share it with us. Reach out to me, jgroup@orionphotogroup.com. It'll be in the show notes too, wherever you're listening to this podcast episode. And I'd love to hear any ideas of episodes or even topic ideas for tips and tricks. I'd love to hear them too. And if we get you on this episode, you'll get a $25 B&H gift card as a way to say thank you. And again, thank you, Ruben, for being on this week. And we will talk to you guys soon. Bye now. All right, that'll do it for this episode featuring OPG's Best of the Best. Would you like to be featured in an upcoming episode, or do you have a suggestion for somebody you'd like to hear from in our little community? Please email me, jgroup@orionphotogroup.com. That's jgroup@orionphotogroup.com. I look forward to hearing from you and hearing your suggestions. We hope that you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to hearing from you and your story. That's it for now. We'll see you on the next episode. Have a great day.